This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you for that introduction. As you sit here before me, I suspect that a lot of you have served and are serving on ministry boards. Maybe you're involved in other leadership responsibilities, so I'm going to make the assumption that we have a lot of common interests. I'm going to start by talking about a little event that happened, unfortunately, after a church service in a church maybe like yours one day, in which the elders were huddling a little bit and talking about when their next pastor's meeting is going to be, and one of them said that, he doesn't have time to meet anytime soon. And so another one said, well, he thinks that the business that they can conduct could be done easily within 10 minutes. And so the three of them decided to just huddle up right there in the back of the sanctuary, and they're going to have their elders meeting. And never mindful of the fact that they're missing out on meeting their parishioners as they stood and visited or were leaving the sanctuary, and never mindful that they were going to be missing out on a chance to be prayerful about the business of the church and their leadership and the decisions that they needed that they were facing. All of this was jettisoned as they took the fast track to have a meeting because they were too busy to take care of the business at hand. I'd just like to beg us all to not go down the track of denigrating meetings, of depreciating the value of deliberation. Because as I think, as we look at some of the things that are involved here today, we're going to discover that we, as board members, play a pivotal role in the success of the work of Jesus Christ and our contribution to the kingdom. And so I invite you to think about a number of things. This is definitely just going to be some things, not the whole scope and sequence of board structure, function, and the relationship with administration, and etc. But some of the things that God has made laid on my hearts that I think can help us to understand where we are and where we need to go. So as we think of boards that make a difference, I think it's crucial that we understand the board's role. God has given to the church a mission, and in society we use the word philanthropy. It's the desire to promote the welfare of others. And so maybe it's missions, maybe it's educational programs, maybe it's a boys camp or a host of other ministries that the church and God's people do. These are ministries of philanthropy that promote the well-being of the communities in which we serve. And most philanthropy or missions is carried out by a nonprofit organization. Nonprofits, because of their role in improving our communities, are given special privileges by the government. So they don't pay very many taxes, for example. And donors receive a tax deduction that's made to any organization that's 501c3 designated. Nonprofit boards. Let me think a little bit about the special place of a nonprofit board. A lot of times boards are out of the public eye, but the governance of an organization that serves the needs of many people has been placed into the hands of a board of directors, sometimes called board of trustees. And this is an awesome responsibility that men and women can serve on a board that in which they are responsible for the oversight, for the people that serve under them, and for the use and the distribution of the finances of the organization. And I say right here that the wisdom that you show on a school board or on any mission board, the decisions that you make and the willingness to give time and money and thoughtful oversight has a long time benefit. It's not just for today. It's not just for this meeting, but will have value and impact for years to come. Why have a board? Maybe somebody here has felt like some administrators when they've had a challenging time and they realize that they're facing something up ahead, they discover that, oh no, I've got to take it to a board. Or maybe they've been discouraged by the fact that the board didn't quickly sign on to the vision that they have. And so they ask, why would we have a board? One of the simplest answers is for checks and balances. And it's not the only function of a board, but it's important that a board recognizes both the special relationship that they have to the administration, but also the fact that they've got complementary roles. So a board is in place to represent the constituency or the community, the community of members. And so the board comes to the meeting with the administrator present and represents everybody else, the ones that support, the ones that send their young people, the ones that give the dollars. The board is in that in-between place, and the law requires that these members be present to hold this organization in trust. So that's why we're trustees as one term, and that the community needs are represented. And also, since financial resources are limited, staff must be kept at a reasonable size. And then here's an additional reason that we're board members. We are representatives of the organization to the community. In addition to representing the community to the administration and staff, so we represent the organization to the community. And we need to be ambassadors. And if you are called to serve on a board and you really don't share the vision, you've got other passions, and bless you if you do. But when you're a board member, you're going to be called to be a representative of that mission, of that vision, and to cast it amongst the community. So look at it as an opportunity. On one hand, we hold the ministry in trust, and we are financially responsible as board members. And yet, on the other hand, we recognize that we can't be responsible for the last dollars. But we ensure that people are put into place that we can trust to take care of this organization in the financial and physical resource area. Boards that make a difference. In the first place, and I want to enlarge on this a little later, but in the first place, we understand the board's role. And secondly, we need to develop the knowledge and skills that we have. Isn't it true that oftentimes we join the board and we need to learn about the organization? And maybe we've had some board experience in the past, but maybe not. So are we prepared? Sadly, we aren't always prepared, but we can learn on the job. So weighty responsibilities like board work can be learned as we go. And you'd think that there should be better training methods that we'd have, but the truth is that a lot of times we just slip on the harness and go to work. What are some of the things that we could do to help strengthen our roles in the board? Well, on the Faith Builders Board in 2013, we looked at 27 or 28 different aspects of board work. And the five lowest ratings that we gave ourselves as the board on average here are these five. And One is the orientation program prepares us as directors to contribute meaningfully. And there are others here that are in white, but the second one that I note out of this list today is our board conducts a thorough evaluation of itself on a regular basis. Both of these, there was some acknowledgement of strength, but it wasn't strong like some other of the characteristics. And so I'll focus today on these two, that we have an orientation program to develop, and also that our board conducts a thorough evaluation of itself on a regular basis. So we think about a development plan. We could propose to develop a 5-year mechanism by which board members can develop the knowledge and skills necessary for successful board function. And we would do this by delivering 20 minutes of writing, video clips, and other assessment instruments every month. So we'd have, over 5 years, 60 episodes. And we'd do this monthly. So, for example, we could pick the book, Doing Good, Even Better. And now this has been updated. There's a green cover. I think it's now entitled and republished with an additional contributor to the book, Doing Good, Better. And this book, we could divide that into, there are 12 chapters here. We could deliver one chapter a month for 12 months to help us think through the responsibilities of board work. And this is a good little book by Edgar Stays. He's a Mennonite that has served on Habitat for Humanity, and it's one of my favorites. Fundraising. We could pick sources for fundraising and address those kinds of needs and develop that. I think among Mennonites, we tend as a group to hesitate to fundraise. We don't like to get too close to this subject naturally. And yet, we can learn. And in fact, it's similar. In my experience, it's similar to the hesitation that we may have to sell, to ask people for, are you ready to order today? There's something that's just a little bit unnatural for us to ask for people's decision. So maybe fundraising is like that. But in my experience, both of those can, with a little experience, there are ways to learn to improve that. So I encourage us to do that. And maybe we'd go to Best Practices for Effective Boards by Fairbanks and others. There are three authors here in this one. This is another good board book. And then to go to the Economic Council of Financial Accountability and get some of their standards and commentary for maybe 6 sessions. And then Call to Serve by Max Dupree, 6. And other readings in organizational leadership, like The Best of Lencioni and Collins and Drucker and et cetera. And then maybe we could supplement and craft this for each organization, the things that would especially bless, like A Curriculum for Christlikeness by Willard or What You Love by Smith and other kinds of lectures, or cut it back to 48, or make it 36, or whatever's right for you in your board work. Board development plan is a possibility that we can, as board members, sharpen our understandings of our roles and the things that we can do, the ways that we can help deliberate in a positive way, and the ways in which we can help cast vision for the organization, for the organizations that we are responsible for. Then I'd like to recommend that we would consider a board contract that could annually be delivered. This is to develop a mechanism by which we're reminded of our responsibilities so that I would sign, I, Gary Miller, understand that as a member of the Board of Directors of XYZ Anabaptist Ministries, I have a legal and ethical responsibility to ensure that the organization does the best work possible in pursuit of its goals. I believe in the purpose and mission of the organization, and I will act responsibly and prudently as its steward. So I would review and sign this, and here I follow then with 8 of the responsibilities. I will interpret the organization's work and values to the constituency. I will represent the organization and act as a spokesperson. In turn, I will interpret our constituency's needs and values to the organization, speak out for their interests and on their behalf, and hold the organization accountable. I will commit to attendance of at least 75% of board and committee meetings. Each year, I will make a personal financial contribution at a level that is meaningful to me. Obviously, we're going to be contributing time to oversight. So there's a contribution already. But if we're really going to be effective in our work as board members, then when we've got skin in the game, when we share the passion, when we're donating on a level, I mean, it's not going to be the same for everybody, but on a level that's meaningful to me, then we will do better. I will actively participate in one or more fundraising activities annually. I will act in the best interests of the organization and excuse myself from discussions and votes where I have a conflict of interest. So if perhaps I work for a company that would possibly do some subcontracting work for the ministry, then I would excuse myself from participating in the decision-making and leave that to others because that is a conflict of interest. I will stay informed about what's going on in the organization. I will ask questions and request information. I will participate and take responsibility for making decisions on issues, policies, and other matters. I will work in good faith with staff and other board members as partners toward achievement of our goals. If I don't fulfill these commitments to the organization, I will expect the board chairman to call me and discuss my responsibilities with me. So that contract maybe isn't necessary because all of you are already doing that. But perhaps an annual reminder of these things that help make it go would be of value, and so I encourage you to consider that. We could go with a board evaluation plan in the second place now. These first two, the contract and the 60 episodes that we could deliver via email, would be for us to orient ourselves and to train ourselves kind of on the fly. But now talk about evaluation, that second area. Here we could have a schedule of assessments by which board members can focus productively on their role as stewards of the divine and constituent trust. So we could have a board member evaluation one time that's specifically about member responsibilities. We could have another board evaluation of the meeting and how it flowed and how it worked and how it was conducted. And then we could have a full board evaluation that would especially address how the board relates and is responsible, and how we, you've got examples in the handout there of these evaluations, and I'll let you consider that further. I won't belabor the finer details. And then there'd be the individual member self-evaluation. So the first one is when I would evaluate my fellow board member, and we'd go around the circle doing several of the board members evaluating their contributions, but then there's also value in the individual member to evaluate himself sometimes. And so that form, as you have it in your handout, would be used for that. So we would have a method here of evaluating board effectiveness through questionnaires. It could also be by interviews, using relevant and clear questions for board development. So to conclude this section, I'd just like to remind us that effective board work doesn't just happen, that it's something that has to be a priority, and it's good for us to sharpen the axe. Like Abraham Lincoln said, never think someone is losing time by stopping to sharpen his axe. And Solomon agrees, a dull axe requires great strength. Be wise and sharpen the blade. Now I'd like to think, not only I've talked in an introductory way about the board's roles, and then I've talked about developing the board's knowledge and skills, now I want to go a little further in distinguishing between the hats of responsibility of board members. So I'm going to illustrate a little bit here by the use of hats. There are five hats and more that board members could wear, but here are five. Just understanding our responsibilities, I want you to think about the governance hat. And this one is a significant hat. For governance, we exercise spiritual discernment to discover God's will for the organization. We help to establish the mission, vision, and values of the organization. The board is responsible to hire or appoint the administrator, and sometimes administrators, but oftentimes the most common model in America is that the board hires the chief administrator, the principal, or the administrator, or director, or CEO, depending on the choice of title. And so we hire, but then we need to support. And one of the most crucial, maybe the most crucial relationship in the org is the relationship between the board chairman and the administrator. And that needs to be close. They need to be aligned in mission, vision, values. They need to understand the work of God through that organization. But they have different roles. And so it's not just a backslapping buddy-buddy thing. We have to recognize that it's the role of the board to lead out in governance, even as influential as the administrator will be. This governance hat belongs to the board. And so the board will set policies and oversee programs, secure finances, and protect the assets. They will ensure the legal and financial and spiritual integrity of the ministry. They will develop a strong board of learning mentors, of directors. So we've got, that's what I just talked about. So again, we don't feel that we've ever just arrived, but we are developing and we're learning as we go. And promote and maintain strong ties to the supporting constituency. This and more, perhaps, but these are some of the essential parts of governance. And so think about governance, the essence of board work. While I'm going to talk about a couple of other hats, I want to make sure that we recognize the central place of governance. And if you have got a heart for this kind of thing, you may be called. You ought to think about using your gifts on board work. And if not, that's okay, because we're gifted differently. The next hat that I want to talk about, and I'll put off the governance hat now, the next hat I want to talk about is the volunteer hat. On nonprofit boards, many times board members help lead the charge. Now we're needing to recognize that board members, while they volunteer, they need to take off this hat when they're volunteering. When Merle Burkholder serves on the Northern Youth Programs Board, he wears the governance hat. When he's in the boardroom with the board, he's got that hat on. But when he comes back up there to help out with some speaking assignment at the Beaver Lake Camp or some other kind of thing that you might volunteer to do or they might ask you to do, then you put on a different hat. So we'll call it the volunteer hat. That's his. Now he speaks as an individual. Now he has to be careful lest he walks around the facility and tries to speak, quote, for the board. Nobody talks for the board by himself, not even the board chairman, unless it's just to represent what the board has already decided. So let's think of ourselves as board members as part of a special kind of behind-the-scenes group, a little like the human heart that beats ongoingly and unseen. So it's a special, special place. But let's also be very careful to remember the hats we're wearing. And let's remember that we can sometimes overreach in what we are, who we're speaking for, and how we, in fact, I serve on the Council of Reference for Northern Youth Programs. And it's a meaningful position to be in. It's a fun position to be in because I get to know some things. I get to work with some good people and interact with these good people. And I get to make some contributions, but I don't have to make the decisions. Others, the board, is going to make those decisions. So I like this role. But I've heard people that maybe they've got the pastor hat, and they come to represent their interests and maybe a certain part of their constituency, and they put pressure on the board. You know, that's not a proper remembrance of hats. A little bit more on hats later. So when you need a board member, recruit a board member. When you need a volunteer, recruit a volunteer. And if a board policy manual and agendas and parliamentary procedures are boring and your gifting and passion are in serving, then volunteer. So let's remember the difference, and both are good and needed. So we must be passion-based in our volunteering and aligned with the volunteer's spiritual gifts and strength. But a board member's primary focus should be on the governance hat. So it's not wrong to be a board member and put on the volunteer hat. It's a good thing. But let's remember which hat we're wearing and be discerning about this. Only the board can govern while many can volunteer. And when a director volunteers, he must leave his governance hat in the boardroom. I suppose you get the point. But we also wear participants' hats. And it's good for organizations to explain right up front that, you know, we expect you to be there at graduation. We expect you to be here at this function. And so on, board members, participation and involvement is very helpful. And so it's good to be a participant hat, sort of related to the volunteer hat. And we may also wear the pastor's hat and the parent's hat. And let's just remember that when we go to the school, the PTA, we go there not as a board member when it's involving our children. We go there as a parent. And so we speak as a parent, keeping in mind where we are, in what role really helps. And board members and pastors need to sharpen up on these things from time to time. I want to think a little bit about management versus governance, just again to help us understand. Management is the staff or the administration and staff, and governance belongs to the board of directors. Are there some overlaps? Yes, there are some. All want to be part of developing vision and so on and so forth. It's good for staff has good buy-in. So I don't want to just make it all or none, but still notice how that management implements and the board develops, how that one is more looking at the ends and the other one is figuring out the means and so on and so forth. One is a little more legislative, like Parliament or the Senate, and one is more executive, like the Prime Minister or President, and so on. So management versus governance helps us to understand our roles. And then to show another little slide that shows how that the Board of Directors represents the constituency. There's an executive committee, most likely, and a chairman of the board that relates particularly closely to the CEO, who supervises senior staff and managers, and then there's the staff volunteers and the program that that this nonprofit is organized on. I have put the plow in and kept it going. And I don't know if I did it right, because I didn't know for sure how I was going to end, how it was all going to come out time-wise. But I would like to just pause here to say, do you have any questions about something that I said? It's probably not all well balanced, and it's certainly not comprehensive of all that an effective board needs to accomplish and do, but time's yours. Yes.
I have a question for you. One question that I get a lot is, a board is legally responsible for what happens on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they make sure that they approve of what happens on the field and nothing goes wrong without administrating the day-to-day details?
Okay, let's help each other here. How do we stay involved in an appropriate way and not getting down into the nitty-gritties? Well, one thing we want to recognize is what you've just said. You've partly got the answer, I think. And that is, remember, we set policies, but we don't get down to micromanage. So that is very good. I'm curious, what else would the group here help me to say? And, you know, geography can make a difference, right? It makes it more challenging, perhaps. Of course, the proximity to a project might cause us to be tempted to be too hands-on involved, too. So there might be some advantages and disadvantages both. So opening it up, those of you, there are some veterans here.
You have the right administrator and trust them to carry out your policies.
Perfect. That's crucial. You know, in the last week, I don't know much about it, but I'm just really interested. There's an administrator of a local Christian school in Hutchinson that I thought has been doing an excellent job of building school spirit and building the improving the school and developing enrollment. But now I read the board puts out a message that he's not coming back. He and his wife are not coming back next year. I don't know what's behind the scenes, but it just must be somehow that the board and the administrator were going in a little different direction somewhere. And I'm sad, honestly, to see it happen. But it is so true that you need to be able to align. And that is one of the responsibilities of a board, is to see to it that they've got the man in place that can carry out their vision as they seek to serve the members of their community. So again, a very, very, very good point. Want to say more? Anybody else? Good question. Yes, I think that it's good periodically, annually, biannually, or sometime. You know, there. Boards may meet monthly, they may meet fewer times depending on the situation. But I think it's good for the board to have some executive session too. And it's good to set that up from the beginning or in a time of good relationships so that it's just part of the routine. Don't wait till there's there's trouble in the camp. And it doesn't have to be that long, but it's just good for board members to be able to say with each, you know, honestly, I wonder if we should be sharpening up in this area. What do you think? And for the board to process a little bit together, because remember, we're not the board. I'm just a board member, and it's good for the board to have to tangle with it. It's a stronger serve. Yes.
Regarding the efficient meeting time, use of meetings, what's the relative value of parliamentary procedure and using Robert's Rules of Order? Do you have any comments on that? When is a waste of time, or is it? How far should we go with that?
Well, we want meetings that are that are orderly. And so oftentimes when it's setting new policy and so on, I think it's a good idea for somebody to say, I move that, or the chairman to solicit a motion. So that's helpful. And then everybody's sitting there thinking, am I in support of that? And if there's a second, then it's the chairman's responsibility to say, is there any discussion about that? It's just good. I mean, regardless whether you, I just feel like some flow of some, this is how we do it. So then if there's any further discussion, fine. There could be an amendment made, but usually if it's not, it's usually a matter of motion. But it's already been discussed. So it's now it's motion and it's second. And then if there's no further discussion, how many of you support? And you can do it by the raise of the hand. If it's a different situation where you sometimes want to have a secret ballot, you can do that. But generally it's a raise of the hand, yea and nay. And I think that's good. Anybody can make a move to say, I don't think we're ready to make this decision, but let's postpone it till next month or next time and so on. I think as far as the highly oiled, we've got to have this motion and we know all the precedents of motions and so on. It's good for a chairman to know some of those things and to solicit those kinds of things. So I'm in favor of some limited use of parliamentary procedure, but... That's where I am. That's where I've been. I'm not the law. So, what are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that it can get very disorganized when we simply look for a nodding of the heads around the table. It can become maybe there's not the same level of accountability from each board member for a decision that way.
That's right. If we let the fast talkers, fast thinkers and fast talkers have the day, and the guy that's quiet there, let's be sure he's got buy-in too. He's often as right as the others, and so we need everybody, and we need buy-in. In the end, and that's another thing, by the way, so once the board has decided, and I've been the dissenter, I wasn't so sure, I might have even voted against it, but once it's decided... When we go out, we all speak the same thing.
Amen.
Right. It's the board. It's not me, and I'm not the board. And board chairmen play an especially critical role here. If a board chairman sort of realizes that the board has some interest in that and doesn't just cut it off like that, can have its place. But somewhere the board chairman has to say, okay, I think we chased that bunny long enough. Let's remember. Sometimes board members need to be reminded, but that's administrative. We need to let the administration decide that one. We know our policy. We've already spoken to that. Let's let them grab it and go from here. So we kind of wander from subject to subject here, but okay. Any other questions? Yes.
I've been involved with school boards and other organizations. I've been in some that it seemed like the time clock had nothing to do with anything other than midnight comes around. When I became chairman, I'm very strong that 2 hours or 3 hours is all that a session can afford to do. Is that incorrect?
I think that's right. Let me tell you something, a technique that Stephen Brubaker and I have enjoyed with some success on the Faith Builders board meetings. So he's got a list of things that we want to talk about. He thinks this might take 60 minutes and this takes 15 and so on. And so we total it all up and we know we've got 10 hours in that day. We don't have monthly meetings. We've got, Saturdays twice a year or something like that. So we've got 10 hours in the day and this comes down to 13. Well, we know we've got too much. And we organize according. We need to start here. And down at the bottom, if we get to it, we get to that. And then he also says, oh, well, this one I put down a 60 minutes. I'll cut that down to 30. And, so he might be presenting. But it gives him an idea. It gives me an idea. And as the afternoon wears along, we start saying, okay, we got to do this. We got to do that. But the rest of it will just fly. So some management of that is in working together between the chair and the administrator is very helpful. Yes. I think that sometimes it's hard for a man that's got his heart in a good thing to realize when it's time to quit. And so I'm in favor of bylaws having some built-in, let's hit reset. I think it serves the organization better. We've got... if a man can give, say, 10 years to an organization, give it his good shot, and then maybe turn it over to somebody else. And occasionally, I've seen it successfully done, that after a year's break, somebody comes back on and serves well beyond that. But I still say, let's think reasonably here. Aren't there others that can pick this thing up and go on from here? And so 10, 12 years maybe is a good time to have a reset. One of the pitfalls that's the most harmful to an organization is for a founder to wear so many hats. And he's the founder, he's the chief administrator, he's got to organize a board, so he's going to be on the board too, and some of that, across our landscape, I can think of a handful or more of people that were strong founders and leaders that their struggles of various ways with that, and so... So that's something to watch. If somebody is that involved, he may have to step aside, especially from the board level, because there may have to be some choices made. And I don't have the whole thing, and we don't have time to get it all figured out. But yes, let's be wary of that. These are complementary roles that work best when they complement, than rather there's too much consolidation in one person. Well, I've got just a minute or two, and I didn't even tell you that. Well, I guess you've got the slide there, but I want you to... I was going to say a little bit about several resources here. I've already said a little bit about this good, doing good better, and then here's another book, How Are We Doing? A One-Hour Guide to... I want to say that. But back to your question. Let me get the nugget. What's the question again?
The value of advisory board and what they should be doing.
Well, the value of an advisory board is just additional sounding. It's additional reach for the org, especially if the org is serving a wide constituency. You don't want to have a board of 20 board members, probably, at least that's unusually big. But if you put, say, 5 men or 7 men or 9 men on a board, and then you get a little more advice and representation, you just increase the communication that goes both ways. And, advisors should be just that. Like I told you, it's not that it's kind of fun to be an advisor. You don't have to face all the music, but you can sure help represent and weigh in. Okay, my time's up. Thank you very much for participating. I just pray God's blessings on you as you go from here, so that your vision is for board work is strong, and if it's not for you, that you can support those that do. And that we don't just try to take shortcuts that short-circuit the work of the Lord.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.